Knowledge, or science, is a building conference, not absolute truth. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, bringing you the Absolute Philosopher. Knowledge or science is a building conference, not absolute truth. Interesting comment. Knowledge or science, these are just things that we use to think about, things we use to put our mind in motion to accomplish the desires that we have in our heart. Knowledge is the same as science. Science is knowledge. And these things have another word that applies to them. It's called fact. These are just facts. But the interesting thing is, a fact seems to be something that is unchangeable, and yet knowledge and science, or science, wisdom, knowledge, understanding, are constantly changing. They're constantly unstabilizing themselves and stabilizing themselves. One minute, butter is bad for you, and the next minute, butter is good for you. One minute, the sun is going to destroy you and do all sorts of evil things to you, and the next minute, the sun is good for you. One minute, aspirins are good for you. They help to keep your blood thin. And the next minute, they're unnecessary. They cause too many other problems in you. Now, give another 10 minutes there, and they'll be good for you again. You see, science is a conference. It's a building conference in which ideas come forth, which are one moment positive, the next moment negative, another moment they're sort of indecisive, but it's not absolute truth. Absolute truth has a few phrases that are kind of fun to look at. One phrase of absolute truth, all is good. Another phrase of absolute truth, all is and is. Another phrase of absolute truth, each is completely separate from another is, and there is no scenario to an is and an is. That is a human scenario creation which ceases to be effective when the human ceases to apply it. And it's effective as any cause and effect thing for a human when they apply it. But in all things, it is but an illusion. Now, let's look at the is. Is the is an illusion too? Certainly. Everything is an illusion. Everything, then what is reality? Well, that's something our present thinking capacity doesn't allow us to be aware of. What is reality? What is the allness? Can you tell me? What is the allness? What is the isness? What is the nothingness? When we play with these terms, we are sort of boggling our mind with ideas that have no definition that is meaningful to us. And you see, absolute truth is like that. Absolute truth is out of our current ballpark. It's out of our way of thinking at the moment. Knowledge and science is a building conference in which thoughts about absolute, thoughts about the relative, thoughts about the allness and thoughts about the nothingness are sort of bandied about with a certain amount of disdain to say that they are important or they're not important, to say that they're vital to know and to say they're not vital to know. And this is kind of an interesting thing, because if we're going to play with absolute in that realm, then we're going to sort of make absolute into something that truly is not important. And maybe that might be what it's all about. Is the relative important? Certainly, we're living in it. We're experiencing it every day. Does it change every day? Yes, it does. Is it the same yesterday, tomorrow, and forevermore? Nope. Well, then why should we think the absolute, the allness, the isness, should be any more permanent than the relative? For whatever we can conceive is always changing. Now, we like to say God is unchangeable. We like to say that the universal law is always the same. Well, the universal law is always the same, and God or the divine or the reality of all is always the same, only insofar as we understand what the same means. Unchanging means. What does that mean? Well, we can look at it from this point. What it means is, we like to say archetypal, you know, like the original thought. But what it means is that it is a concept, and that in the ultimate of the concept, going back to its original creative aspect, it is unchangeable. When I say the thought blue, and you say, oh, that's interesting, blue, the sky, the ocean, the whatever, you know. Well, blue is not those things. Blue is a concept in our mind. For if we were to say to a person in another language, blue, and they would give us from their language what the word blue is, and then we go to another language, and another language, and another language, and we find all these different words for the same concept. Well, the concept is the idea of blue. And all these words are descriptive words or phrases relating to it. Each one is different, yet the concept is always the same. And if you move the concept from a blue hat to a blue sky to a blue ocean to a blue feeling to a blue attitude or whatever, you're defining the word beyond its blueness, because blue is merely a concept, an attitude. Blue is something that is unchangeable, yet it is constantly being interpreted, it's constantly being changed, it's constantly being given all sorts of different aspects to it. And how can absolute truth, if we will say blue is an absolute truth, how can absolute truth be absolute truth and yet have such a diversity of feeling about it? Well, how can the word absolute truth be absolute truth if we interpret absolute in many ways and we interpret truth in many ways? Well, what is truth? As we defined it earlier, truth is the effect of the law of cause and effect. Truth is that which is in a result. Well, now, from absolute point of view, truth stands before the effect. Truth stands before the cause and effect. Truth stands before any of these things. It is the beginning, it is the foundation upon which all these things are based. Ah, now we're coming into some interesting concepts. What do we say about truth as the absolute philosopher? How do we define these things? How do we relay these things? Well, that's a point. We do not define them, and we do not relay them. We are them. And this is the big difference between wanting something to be something and wanting to understand it and being it. For when I say to you, you are a 20-year-old person, now act like a 20-year-old person, and you'll say, well, I'm a 20-year-old person, however I act is how a 20-year-old person acts. No, it isn't. You're acting like an old person, or you're acting like a kid, you're acting like a child. Well, a 20-year-old person can act like a child, a 20-year-old person can act like a mature adult, a 20-year-old person can do any of these things, and that's what a 20-year-old person is. Oh, now we're beginning to see something. The 20-year-old person is the allness. A 20-year-old person is the older, the younger, the middle. The 20-year-old person is the 20-year-old person is the allness. So, there's no way that we're supposed to act. We're just supposed to be ourselves and have fun. There's no way that we're supposed to be a semblance of something. What is the archetypal concept of a 20-year-old person? What's an archetypal concept of a 50-year-old or 1,000-year-old person? Ellen had a young man working on the jacuzzi, and he was 23. And he came walking in, and he was, or rather, on the air conditioning furnace. And as he came walking in, brilliant young man, very charming, very attractive, and Ellen said, I just couldn't take my eyes off his clear brown eyes. And he walked in with a self-confidence that was amazing, 23. And his self-confidence was backed up by the fact he did know what he was doing. He went right to the problem, solved it, replaced whatever had to be replaced, and when he was finished, he said, there. And so then, in a five-minute turn, he gave Ellen the story of his attitude about himself. And the attitude about himself was that he liked himself, that he thought that he wanted to, his parents wanted him to go to college, and he didn't want to go to college. He did 1 year and just fooled around. So then they said, I'm not paying for any more college if you're not going to apply yourself. So his father had been in air conditioning, and so he went into air conditioning. But he went in it with a self-confidence of, it's in the family, I know how to do these things, and he did. Now, is he truly a happy person? You bet. Is he doing what he likes to do? You bet. Is the tedious work of his job overwhelming him? Not in the slightest. He says, I do these things, and I do those things, and I am me, and I am happy. And wow, at 23, to arrive at that level of self-confidence, how great it is. And really, the statement is, how strange it is. Because we're born with that self-confidence, we're born divine, we're born fabulous, and then from the time we're born until we're ready to leave home, we are told that we're limited. We're told we have to learn things instead of that we already know it. We're told these things. And so, you see, when you can live through that being told that you're less than perfect and be perfect, you have done a masterful thing. You see, knowledge or science is the building conference, not the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is all that knowledge or science could ever be, all that experience could ever be. Absolute truth is its effect, its fulfillment. It's the essence of the is. Think on these things. They're kind of fun to be the absolute philosopher and sort of banter around in these thought processes, because you always come up with the same answer. Be yourself and have fun. Enjoy life. Now is the only time there is. And make sure that you are living now, and not in the past or the future, but right now, and getting the most out of everything you do. Have a great day, and know I love you, I love you, I love you.